The Merry Tales of Jacques Tournebrush. The Merry Tales of Jacques Tournebrush. Olivier's Brag. The Emperor Charlemagne and his 12 peers, having taken the palmer's staff at Saint-Denis, made a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. They prostrated themselves before the tomb of our Lord, and sat in the 13 chairs of the great hall wherein Jesus Christ and his apostles met together to celebrate the blessed sacrifice of the Mass. Then they fared to Constantinople, being fain to see King Hugo, who was renowned for his magnificence. The king welcomed them in his palace, where, beneath a golden dome, birds of ruby, wrought with a wondrous art, sat and sang in bushes of emerald. He seated the Emperor of France and the 12 counts about a table loaded with stags, boars, cranes, wild geese, and peacocks, served in pepper. And he offered his guests, in ox horns, the wines of Greece and Asia to drink. Charlemagne and his companions quaffed all these wines in honor of the king and his daughter, the Princess Helen. After supper Hugo led them to the chamber where they were to sleep. Now this chamber was circular, and a column, springing in the midst thereof, carried the vaulted roof. Nothing could be finer to look upon. Against the walls, which were hung with gold and purple, 12 beds were ranged, while another greater than the rest stood beside the pillar. Charlemagne lay in this, and the counts stretched themselves round about him on the others. The wine they had drunk ran hot in their veins, and their brains were afire. They could not sleep, and fell to making brags instead, and laying of wagers, as is the way of the knights of France, each striving to outdo the other and warranting himself to do some doughty deed for to manifest his prowess. The emperor opened the game. He said, "Let them fetch me, a horseback and fully armed, the best knight King Hugo hath. I will lift my sword and bring it down upon him in such wise it shall cleave helm and hauberk, saddle and steed, and the blade shall delve a foot deep underground." Guillaume d'Orange spake up after the emperor and made the second brag. "I will take," said he, "a ball of iron 60 men can scarce lift, and hurl it so mightily against the palace wall that it shall beat down 60 fathoms length thereof." Ogier, the Dane, spake next. "Ye see yon proud pillar which bears up the vault. Tomorrow will I tear it down and break it like a straw." After which Renaud de Montauban cried with an oath, "Odd's life! Count Ogier, whiles you overset the pillar, I will clap the dome on my shoulders and hale it down to the seashore." Gerard de Rousil and it was made the fifth brag. He boasted he would uproot single-handed, in 1 hour, all the trees in the royal pleasaunce. Aymer took up his parable when Gerard was done. "I have a magic hat," said he, "made of a sea calf's skin, which renders me invisible. I will set it on my head, and tomorrow, when as King Hugo is seated at meat, I will eat up his fish and drink down his wine, I will tweak his nose and buffet his ears. Not knowing whom or what to blame, he will clap all his serving men in jail and scourge them sore, and we shall laugh." "For me," declared Huon de Bordeaux, whose turn it was, "for me, I am so nimble I will trip up to the king and cut off his beard and eyebrows without his knowing aught about the matter. Tis as a piece of sport I will show you tomorrow. And I shall have no need of a sea-calf hat either." Dulin de Mayence made his brag too. He promised to eat up in 1 hour all the figs and all the oranges and all the lemons in the king's orchards. Next the Dunasum said in this wise, "By my faith, I will go into the banquet hall, I will catch out flagons and cups of gold and fling them so high they will never light down again save to tumble into the moon." Bernard de Brabant then lifted his great voice. "I will do better yet," he roared. "Ye know the river that flows by Constantinople is broad and deep, for it is come nigh its mouth by then, after traversing Egypt, Babylon, and the earthly paradise. Well, I will turn it from its bed and make it flood the great square of the city." Gerard de Vian said, "Put a dozen knights in line of array. And I will tumble all the 12 on their noses, only by the wind of my sword." It was the Count Roland laid the 12th wager, in the fashion following. "I will take my horn, I will go forth of the city and I will blow such a blast all the gates of the town will drop from their hinges." Olivier alone had said no word yet. He was young and courteous, and the emperor loved him dearly. "Olivier, my son," he asked, "will you not make your brag like the rest of us?" "Right willingly, sire," Olivier replied. "Do you know the name of Hercules of Greece?" "Yea, I have heard some discourse of him," said Charlemagne. "He was an idol of the misbelievers, like the false god Mahound." "Not so, sire," said Olivier. "Hercules of Greece was a knight among the pagans and king of a pagan kingdom. He was a gallant champion and stoutly framed in all his limbs. Visiting the court of a certain emperor who had 50 daughters, virgins, he wedded them all on one and the same night, and that so well and truly that next morning they all avowed themselves well-contented women and with naught left to learn. He had not slighted ever a one of them. "Well, sire, an you will, I will lay my wager to do after the fashion of Hercules of Greece." "Nay, beware, Olivier, my son," cried the emperor, "beware what you do, the thing would be a sin. I felt sure this King Hercules was a Saracen." "Sire," returned Olivier, "know this, I warrant me to show in the same space of time the selfsame prowess with one virgin that her Isles of Greece did with 50. And the maid shall be none other but the Princess Helen, King Hugo's daughter." "Good and well," agreed Charlemagne, "that will be to deal honestly and as a good Christian should. But you are in the wrong, my son, to drag the 50 virgins of King Hercules into your business, wherein, the devil fly away with me else, I can see but one to be concerned." "Sire," answered Olivier mildly, "there is but one of a truth. But she shall win such satisfaction of me that, an I number the tokens of my love, you will tomorrow see 50 crosses scored on the wall, and that is my brag." The Count Olivier was yet speaking when lo! The column which bare the vault opened. The pillar was hollow and contrived in such sort that a man could lie hid therein at his ease to see and hear everything. Charlemagne and the 12 counts had never a notion of this, so they were sore surprised to behold the King of Constantinople step forth. He was white with anger and his eyes flashed fire. He said in a terrible voice, "So this is how ye show your gratitude for the hospitality I offer you. Ye are ill-mannered guests. For a whole hour have ye been insulting me with your bragging wagers. Well, know this, you, Sir Emperor, and ye, his knights, if tomorrow ye do not all of you make good your boasts, I will have your heads cut off." Having said his say, he stepped back within the pillar, which shut to again closely behind him. For a while the 12 paladins were dumb with wonder and consternation. The emperor was the first to break the silence. "Comrades," he said, "'tis true we have bragged too freely. Mayhap we have spoken things better unsaid. We have drunk over much wine, and have shown unwisdom. The chiefest fault is mine, I am your emperor, and I gave you the bad example. I will devise with you tomorrow of the means whereby we may save us from this perilous pass. Meantime, it behoves us to get to sleep. I wish you a good night. God have you in his keeping." A moment later the emperor and the 12 peers were snoring under their coverlets of silk and cloth of gold. They awoke on the morrow, their minds still distraught and deeming the thing was but a nightmare. But anon soldiers came to lead them to the palace, that they might make good their brags before the king's face. "Come," cried the emperor, "come, and let us pray God and his holy mother. By Our Lady's help shall we easily make good our brags." He marched in front with a more than human majesty of port. Arriving anon at the king's palace, Charlemagne, Naism, Aymer, Huon, Doulin, Guillaume, Ogier, Bernard, Renaud, the two Gerards, and Roland fell on their knees and, joining their hands in prayer, made this supplication to the Holy Virgin. "Lady, which art in paradise, look on us now in our extremity. For love of the realm of the lilies, which is thine own, protect the Emperor of France and his 12 peers, and give them the puissance to make good their brags." Thereafter they rose up comforted and fulfilled of bright courage and gallant confidence, for they knew that Our Lady would answer their prayer. King Hugo, seated on a golden throne, accosted them, saying, "The hour is come to make good your brags. But and if ye fail so to do, I will have your heads cut off. Be gone therefore, straightway, escorted by my men-at-arms, each one of you to the place meet for the doing of the fine things ye have insolently boasted ye will accomplish." At this order they separated and went divers ways, each followed by a little troop of armed men. While some returned to the hall where they had passed the night, others betook them to the gardens and orchards. Bernard de Brabant made for the river, Roland hied him to the ramparts, and all marched valiantly. Only Olivier and Charlemagne tarried in the palace, waiting, the one for the knight that he had sworn to cleave in twain, the other for the maiden he was to wed. But in very brief while a fearful sound arose, awful as the last trump that shall proclaim to mankind the end of the world. It reached the great hall of the palace, set the birds of ruby trembling on their emerald perches and shook King Hugo on his throne of gold. 'Twas a noise of walls crumbling into ruin and floods roaring, and high above the din blared out an ear-splitting trumpet blast. Meanwhile messengers had come hurrying in from all quarters of the city, and thrown themselves trembling at the king's feet, bearing strange and terrible tidings. "Sire," said one, "60 fathoms length of the city walls is fallen in at one crash." "Sire," cried another, "the pillar which bare up your vaulted hall is broken down, and the dome thereof we have seen walking like a tortoise toward the sea." "Sire," faltered a third, "the river, with its ships and its fishes, is pouring through the streets, and will soon be beating against your palace walls. King Hugo, white with terror, muttered. By my faith. These men are wizards. Well, Sir King, Charlemagne addressed him with a smile on his lips, the knight I wait for is long of coming. The king sent for him, and he came. He was a knight of stately stature and well armed. The good emperor clave him in twain, as he had said. Now while these things were a-doing, Olivier thought to himself. The intervention of our most blessed lady is plain to see in these marvels, and I am rejoiced to behold the manifest token she vouchsafes of her love for the realm of France. Not in vain have the emperor and his companions implored the succor of the Holy Virgin, Mother of God. Alas! I shall pay for all the rest, and have my head cut off. For I cannot well ask the Virgin Mary to help me make good my brag. 'Tis an enterprise of a sort wherein 'twould be indiscreet to crave the interference of her who is the lily of purity, the tower of ivory, the guarded door and the fence tortured close. And, lacking aid from on high, I am sore afraid I may not do so much as I have said. Thus ran Olivier's thoughts, when King Hugo roughly accosted him with the words. 'Tis now your turn, Count, to fulfill your promise. Sire, replied Olivier, I am waiting with great impatience for the princess your daughter. For you must needs do me the priceless grace of giving me her hand. That is but fair, said King Hugo. I will therefore bid her come to you and a chaplain with her for to celebrate the marriage. At church, during the ceremony, Olivier reflected. The maid is sweet and comely as ever a man could desire, and too fain am I to clip her in my arms to regret the brag I have made. That evening, after supper, the Princess Helen and the Count Olivier were escorted by 12 ladies and 12 knights to a chamber, wherein the twain were left alone together. There they passed the night, and on the morrow guards came and led them both before King Hugo. He was on his throne, surrounded by his knights. Nearby stood Charlemagne and the peers. Well, Count Olivier, demanded the king, is your brag made good? Olivier held his peace, and already was King Hugo rejoiced at heart to think his new son-in-law's head must fall. For of all the brags and boasts, it was Olivier's had angered him worst. Answer, he stormed. Do you dare to tell me your brag is accomplished? Thereupon the Princess Helen, blushing and smiling, spake with eyes downcast and in a faint voice, yet clear withal, and said, Yea. Right glad were Charlemagne and the peers to hear the princess say this word. Well, well, said Hugo, these Frenchmen have God and the devil o' their side. It was fated I should cut off none of these knights' heads. Come hither, son-in-law, and he stretched forth his hand to Olivier, who kissed it. The Emperor Charlemagne embraced the princess and said to her, Helen, I hold you for my daughter and my son's wife. You will go along with us to France, and you will live at our court. Then, as his lips lay on the princess's cheek, he rounded softly in her ear. You spake as a loving-hearted woman should. But tell me this in closest confidence, did you speak the truth? She answered. Sire, Olivier is a gallant man and a courteous. He was so full of pretty ways and dainty devices for to distract my mind, I never thought of counting. Nor yet did he keep score. Needs therefore must I hold him quit of his promise. King Hugo made great rejoicings for his daughter's nuptials. Thereafter Charlemagne and his 12 peers returned back to France, taking with them the Princess Helen. E=Link2H40003. The Miracle of the Magpie. E=Link2H40004. I. Lent, of the year 1429, presented a strange marvel of the calendar, a conjunction that moved the admiration not only of the common crowd of the faithful, but eke of clerks, well learned in arithmetic. For astronomy, mother of the calendar, was Christian in those days. In 1429 Good Friday fell on the feast of the Annunciation, so that one and the same day combined the commemoration of the two several mysteries which did commence and consummate the redemption of mankind, and in wondrous wise superimposed one on top of the other, Jesus conceived in the Virgin's womb and Jesus dying on the cross. This Friday, whereon the mystery of joy came so to coincide exactly with the mystery of sorrow, was named the Grand Friday, and was kept holy with solemn feasts on Mount Anise, in the Church of the Annunciation. For many years, by gift of the popes of Rome, the sanctuary of Mount Anise had possessed the privilege of the plenary indulgences of a great jubilee, and the late deceased Bishop of Lepuy, Ali de Lestrange, had gotten Pope Martin to restore this pardon. It was a favor of the sort that popes scarce ever refused, when asked in due and proper form. The pardon of the Grand Friday drew a great crowd of pilgrims and traders to Lepuy and Villers. As early as mid-February folk from distant lands set out thither in cold and wind and rain. For the most part they fared on foot, staff in hand. Whenever they could, these pilgrims traveled in companies, to the end they might not be robbed and held to ransom by the armed bands that infested the country parts, and by the barons who exacted toll on the confines of their lands. Inasmuch as the mountain districts were especially dangerous, they tarried in the neighboring towns, Clermont, Issoire, Brid, Lyons, Issingaux, Alais, till they were gathered in a great host, and then went forth on their road in the snow. During Holy Week a strange multitude thronged the hilly streets of Lepuy, peddlers from Languedoc and Provence and Catalonia, leading their mules laden with leather goods, oil, wool, webs of cloth, or wines of Spain and goatskins, lords a horseback and ladies in wains, artisans and traders pacing on their mules, with wife or daughter perched behind. Then came the poor pilgrim folk, limping along, halting and hobbling, stick in hand and bag on back, panting up the stiff climb. Last were the flocks of oxen and sheep being driven to the slaughterhouses. Now, leant against the wall of the bishop's palace, stood Florent Guillaume, looking as long and dry and black as an espalier vine in winter, and devoured pilgrims and cattle with his eyes. "Look," he called to Marguerite the lacemaker, "look at yonder fine heads of bestial." And Marguerite, squatted beside her bobbins, called back, "Yea, fine beasts, and fat withal." Both the twain were very bare and scant of the goods of this world, and even then were feeling bitterly the pinch of hunger. And folk said it came of their own fault. At that very moment Pierre Grammange the tripe seller was saying as much, where he stood in his tripe shop, pointing a finger at them. "Tea would be sinful," he was crying, "to give an alms to such good-for-nothing varlets." The tripe seller would fain have been very charitable, but he feared to lose his soul by giving to evil livers, and all the fat citizens of Lepuy had the selfsame scruples. To say truth, we must needs allow that, in the